Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
The Steve Austin Show is brought to you free today by our friends at BetOnline. Get in the mix at BetOnline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 for your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
Podcast One presents the Steve Austin Show Classics.
We're going to turn it up a little bit this week. We're going to laugh out loud. It gets a little bit lighthearted, and we tell some funny stories from life on the road, ribs, and wrestling. LOL stuff from my buddy at Sean Waltman, at The Real X-Pac. We're going to start talking about in-ring action, his favorite angles, his favorite matches, ribs, bullshit, chicken shit, and some horse shit. Sean, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, man. I'm glad you brought me back, see, because I'm so long-winded. When you ask me a question, it takes me like 15 minutes to answer it. So.
Dude, you've got to understand, I get to talk to a lot of people on this show. This has been we've had a hell of a conversation last week. There was so much going on, we had to keep talking. So here we are. And I tell you what, man. I got into a place back in the day when I was the drinking guy, and I kind of hit some highs and lows, and I ran too hard there for a while towards the end of my career. And I remember that time I worked with Scott Hall at WrestleMania 18, and it wasn't my best match, wasn't my best endeavor, and I wasn't in a good place in my head, but everything turned out okay. I'm happy that everything turned out okay for you. But hey, man, on this show, on this hour's worth of audio whoop-ass, I just opened that can. Dude, let's talk about some of your favorite matches, angles, ribs, and stuff like that. Where do you want to start?
We could talk about each one of those subjects for quite some time, Steve.
Well, I sent out a tweet about some questions. I didn't even open up my email yet. But I kept getting some tweets about the plane ride from hell.
Okay, yeah.
Let's jump into the plane ride from hell because...
Well, you were there, weren't you?
Well, yeah, I was. But I was sitting up in the front of the plane, and I was plastered because I was drinking, and you guys were doing your thing in the back. So what happened on the plane ride from hell?
Oh, God. I mean, you know, there's things that happened that, you know, that was such a big plane, and it was all ours.
Hey, where was that? Where were we coming back from?
We were coming back from a pay-per-view or something. Yeah, a pay-per-view in the UK.
Yeah, UK.
Sure. Yeah, it was. It was a pay-per-view in the UK because I worked with Bradshaw on the pay-per-view, and Scott came down during the finish. And yeah, and, you know, it's hard. It would be hard for me to, like, hold back on you, just to be worrying about anybody's feelings or whatever. But, like, I mean, what happened happened. And, you know, I saw one of the questions talk about the ponytail incident. I don't know if you recollect seeing that.
No, I don't remember seeing that.
I saw that there was a few.
Yeah, no, I saw the tweet. What happened with the ponytail?
Well, it was Michael Hayes.
You cut his ponytail off?
Yeah, don't you remember that happened?
Dude, yeah, I remember. I was in the ozone layer, man. I don't remember shit.
Yeah. Yeah, and
so we're flying. We're at 40,000 feet. We've been in the UK. We knocked down a pay per view. The boys are rocking. Everything's flying on the airplane, and you know I'm comatose in the front. You guys are zinging in the back. What possessed you to cut off Michael P.S. Hayes's ponytail?
Well, because every time like that, I was around him when he was drunk. He was a complete fucking asshole.
He's a sloppy drunk, and I want to talk to Michael on the show because, man, I'm a big Fabulous Freebirds fan.
I'm a huge Fabulous Freebirds
fan. Yeah, and I'm a huge Michael Hayes fan, but he was a little bit of a belligerent or sloppy drunk.
Because, like, I was a huge fan of his. The Wolf Pack, we copied the Freebirds.
Right.
You know, and Will would be the first to admit it. I'm a huge, huge fan of his, and he does a great job. He's real smart, and he does a great job for them. But he's a dick when he drinks.
So you were back there where you were probably floating a little bit too, right?
You know, I wasn't drinking. I wasn't taking no pills. I might have been smoking some reefer in the bathroom, you know, but that was way past statute of limitations. So I can't get heat for that, for saying that.
So, right, okay. Steve? So we're flying, and all of a sudden, what, does a light bulb flash in your head? And
well,
you say,
no, he was being a dick to everybody, right?
Right.
He's so fucked up. he had been given Bradshaw. Oh, I know. Bradshaw got color in my match at the pay-per-view.
Okay, let me stop you right there.
I was trying to get the nunchuck.
Hang on right there. You just said Bradshaw got color in your match. To my fans who don't know what color is, he was bleeding. No, someone sent me an email to explain these things. So Bradshaw ended up bleeding in the match with X-Pac. Continue.
And so it was a real, brand-new wound, and there was a little bit of tape over it, and I think it might already, been trickling a little bit, because when you alcohol is a blood thinner.
Yeah, so when you thin that blood, that thing starts bleeding again.
Yeah, and I guess, Michael always, the Freebird and Abe's thing with the fingers up in there instead of shaking hands.
Right.
It's hard to explain to the people, but it's kind of just like curling your fingers up and just...
It's a knuckle bump.
...pointing your knuckles at somebody.
It's a knuckle bump. You just kind of hold it up in the air and they do it back. It's like, okay, shake.
It's still cool to me. But he named JBL right in the fucking spot, And the story goes JBL just cold cocked him one and knocked him out. And when I saw him passed out with his fucking head all forward under the front seat, or the seat in front of him, I should say, I don't know, man. It's just the Curt Hennig training in me. Just immediately, I was like, who's got a pair of fucking scissors?
Oh, God.
And that was after 9/11, right? So right. You're not supposed to really have scissors on the flight, usually, but it was a charter flight, so we could do whatever we wanted. Somebody, he doesn't mind me saying his name, but I'll still leave it out. But they were kind of an enigmatic brother tag team. One of those guys gave me the scissors.
Right.
And everybody's like in Lawler's, like 5 feet from me. And he's already kind of stirring me up a little bit because of some underlying heat that goes back to Memphis.
Right.
So people are like, you don't have the fucking balls. And I'm like, I from the get-go, I was going to do it. Like, nobody had to egg me on.
But right.
I fucking did that deal, like when you pulling the fucking tape brass knuckles out of your trunk, like real slow pantomime for the people way up at the top of the building.
Right.
And held the scissors up in the air.
Hey, you're a worker, brother.
Yeah, right? Everybody's looking, the whole fucking plane. And I mean everybody. And I fucking take the hair and chop. I fucking, and the place went nuts. 1985 Road Warrior pops.
the biggest pop in the world.
I put the hair up when we got back. I hung the hair up on the wall, like, as a trophy, and fucking JR, and I love him to death, but he had to do it. He just took it down off the wall. I wish I would have kept the hair.
Are you part Indian?
I am. Not much, but I think I found out I am.
What was the repercussions of that? Did he get pissed off at you? Did he understand? Did he kind of come to Jesus meeting with you?
No. I expected we were going to fight. Like, I wouldn't blame him if he wanted to.
Right.
But he was, he knows he's a dick when he drinks. But I get along with him good now. He knows I did it. I got a receipt coming. Like, if he can get it on me, take it. Go ahead.
Explain to my listeners what a receipt is.
Oh, a receipt. It's just like getting somebody back.
Yeah, if somebody does something to you, it's the payback. All right, in the ring, a receipt is if a guy is teeing off on you and hitting you too hard, finally you got to send him one back that says, hey, man, settle the fuck down.
You got to give a receipt, yeah.
Hey, so here's a question for you. My wife teaches special education. She did. She's retired now. My wife taught special education. And at middle school, about 15, it was a pretty good ways back before I met her. And my wife, she's smart. She didn't watch pro wrestling. She was just a teacher.
Right.
And so this kid comes in, and I think these kids are about 13, 14 years old that my wife taught. And this one particular kid was Musafar, and he was from Serbia. And there had been war going on in Serbia, and he was a special ed student, and he also didn't speak that great of English. So he would be in my wife's special ed class, and you know how you guys used to do the crotch chop and go, suck it!
Yeah.
So he was walking around the classroom going, suck it, suck it to all the other kids. And then he'd look at my wife and he'd go, suck it.
Oh, God.
And my wife's thinking, what in the fuck is wrong with this kid? Because that's inappropriate. You don't tell a teacher to suck it.
Right.
And then he was doing wrestling moves on all the other people. And my wife just thought the kid was batshit crazy.
Right.
Finally.
She didn't know where it was coming from?
No, she didn't know where it was coming from. So finally, her friend teacher Bob saw a picture of you, brought the picture of you, X-Pac, to the class and explained to him who and what you were and how this originated. So then my wife didn't think the kid was batshit crazy. So you have influenced a lot of kids, especially one young man from Serbia way back in the day with the suck it thing. So with that being said, and you being a big part of DX and the Outsiders / NWO,
right.
which group did you have the most fun with?
Wow. I guess I'll honestly have to say, even though, like, the NWO, to me, like, helped start the whole fucking wrestling boom.
Right.
I just think that once I came back, and while I was out hurt, and Eric fired me by FedEx, you know, while I was home with a broken neck, just to punish Kevin and Scott, because their contracts were sweeter than mine, and they couldn't fuck with those two. There's a little bit more to the story in Eric's defense, because Eric and I get along fine.
Right.
You know, I don't hold grudges like at all, and I kind of understand a little bit more where he was coming from now. But still, he fucking fired me by FedEx, which is kind of a pussy thing to do.
Well, I got fired over the phone, so what the fuck?
Right. I knew that, and like I knew that, like, you and I had that kind of thing in common when it comes to Eric. Like, he shit the bed twice, huh? On that. Those fucking firings ended up biting him in the ass.
Hey, what was the craziest thing that you guys in the clique did?
Wow. You mean the clique combined, all five of us?
Yeah, just...
Like, you know, I mean, people, you know, they bring up the... I don't talk about it too much, but like I'll mention it just because, I mean, I gotta own it. Like, you know, the pooping in Sonny's deli tray. We'd all bring deli back,
Let me break this down for him, Sean. Back in the day, I'll set the story for you to do the payoff. Back in the day, we would go to the UK for 7 days, and then we'd go right to Germany for 7 days, or vice versa. We had a heel bus, and we had a baby face bus to protect the integrity of the business.
Of course.
So anyway, when we got to the building, you know, these towns are pretty far apart. So we would wrestle in one building, and as soon as we got to the building, we'd all go to catering and eat.
Catering is what I meant to say, not deli, obviously.
Yeah, we all went to catering and ate our meal. And then you would get a container, a foil container, which was probably about 8 inches long and about 6 inches wide and about 2 or 3 inches deep. You would fill your to-go meal in that and then place a cardboard lid over the top of it and crimp the edges to seal it. And that's what you would eat later, either
right.
on the bus.
Also, you would also write your name on it.
Yeah, you'd write your name on it so you knew it was yours. And you'd crimp the lid down so that you could eat it either on the bus or in your room whenever you got hungry again. So that's these little containers that we would use. And everybody made a to-go meal because you had to, because there were long drives afterwards. So for some reason, Sonny had heat with a lot of the boys.
Yes.
So why did you guys decide, or what did you guys decide to do?
Well, let me tell you what the heat was over. She was complaining, pissing and moaning because... You know, we were cutting into her workout time, I guess, because we weren't getting on the bus on time for her.
Oh.
And we could be dicks. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. Like, we thought we were on a bit of a power trip. I'm not going to lie.
Well, strength in numbers, and you guys were, you know, and, 4 or 5 matches on the card.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, and I kind of have that Kurt Hennig training instilled in me, and I don't know. Like, I guess somehow we, well, I'm not going to say we, because I got to take responsibility for it myself. That's nobody else did it. I did. You know, but I was a bit of a follower back then. Somehow that seemed to be a big enough offense for me to, And they knew they had heat, so they hid their stuff all the way across the arena.
Well, they had a kayfabe dressing room, so yeah. They had their stuff locked up, and there was a chain around the fence. So you scaled up over the chain link fence.
Thank you.
Jumped
I forgot
in
about a, that.
Yeah, you scaled over and jumped through the chain link fence and proceeded.
What I did was I found the food, and I opened it up nice and carefully, and I pulled the chicken breast up, and I dumped the turd under the chicken breast, put the chicken breast back over it, and I put it back up, and I put it back in place nicely, and I climbed back over the fence.
Stop. So when you climb over the cage, a la Spider-Man, go down, find the lunch kit, remove the top. Do you just drop trowel and lay a turd from your ass, or had you put the turd in a transportable device?
No, I can't tell you whose turd it was, but it wasn't mine. And
you're walking around with a turd in your hand
to so and so a spot, and there would be the turd in a container.
What kind of container do you carry a turd? Hey, stop! What kind of container do you carry a turd in?
I think this might have been even the same catering container.
Okay, gotcha. Y'all got a turd container to go.
Right.
So you remove the chicken breast, you lay the turd in.
Yeah. And right on the pasta, put the chicken breast back on top. You know, carefully recrimp it and, you know, climb back over and business as usual. You actually have a really funny recollection of things that I don't even remember, man.
Yeah.
Because you have me belly laughing when you were explaining how they, you know, how they sold it and everything, because we like I wasn't like trying to be near the go back to the scene of the crime. Like, you know, we just did it and just went about our business.
Yeah, but the thing about it was, I didn't know that you guys had shit in the lunch kit. I know the story how you got in there and all that now, but what happened was, I guess they had a duffel bag, and at the time she was with Chris Candido, who's no longer with us, who was wrestling as Skip. But anyway, so they put the lunch kit in the duffel bag, and these are the big tour buses that when you stop, the driver gets out and pops the side hatches. And so, man, when we arrived at the hotel, it was 3 a.m, whatever it was. And whenever we're overseas in Germany or UK, it don't matter what time we get to the hotel, whether it's 1 a.m, 3 a.m, or 5 a.m, they keep the bar open for us. And that's
right.
The way we rolled. And that's the way it was in back in the day. Yeah. So, man, we were heading straight to the bar, but everybody had to get their bags first. And when they popped the hatches on that damn bus, it smelled like someone had taken a big steaming shit on the sidewalk. And it was a turd in the bag in the container that, you know, had Sonny's name on it. But they didn't know that yet. And I could smell that motherfucker like it was today. They went all the way up to the room, put the bags in the room. I guess I'm assuming they took the lunch kit out and put it on the cabinet or whatever they had there in their room. And still didn't smell a rat, in this case, a turd. I guess evidently, as the story goes, I could have her come on and confirm this, but
right.
I guess about 3:34 in the morning, I guess someone got the munchies and went to open that motherfucker, and there was a big-ass stink pickle.
I didn't want to think about that part. Ugh.
But I just remember there was a phone call being made. Sonny was on a flight going back to the United States, and Chris Candido was hotter than a sumbitch. And I was with Davey Boy Smith. We kind of hung out a little bit together back in the day. And, you know, Davey had that thick Manchester accent.
Right.
He said, man, there's going to be a lot of fucking heat about this. And I says, Chris is mad as a motherfucker. And I said, dude, what's y'all mad about? And this Davey Boy, I couldn't believe. He goes, what the fuck you talking about? What's he fucking mad about? He's shitting his fucking wife's lunch kit. And I was like, well, fuck, he didn't shit in his. He wasn't the one that was ribbed. You know, now I think if somebody's shitting my wife's lunch kit, I'd be a mad motherfucker too.
Yeah.
So anyway, they shipped her home. Davey was ballistic, and, you know, the rib was what it was. But it was interesting.
You know, though, like, a similar thing happened when I first got there that I wasn't a part of, that they did a similar thing to Medusa.
I didn't know that.
But she never sold it. She never sold it once. Nobody would have ever known, and nobody did ever know, because she sold it. She was like a champ. She didn't sell shit.
Yeah, but Deuce was like one of the boys.
Damn right she is.
Everybody respected Deuce because she could work her ass off. She was tough as nails, and she was cool in the gang. She was basically one of the boys.
Yeah. Yeah, but, like, nobody would have made – I mean, you know, so it ended there.
Right.
So, you know, the rib, it didn't pay off because she didn't sell it. Because you know as well as I do, the rib's no good unless somebody sells it.
Yeah. If you don't sell it, then, you know, everybody's saying, hey, man, it didn't get over because they're not going to register.
Yeah. And then there's the one with Sable. And, you know, it's a little funny for me because now she's married to Brock. But back in the day, you got to admit, Steve, Sable had a scorching fucking heat with the boys.
Yeah, she had a little heat.
Yeah, come on. I mean, with some of the, like, she was claiming to be the reason why the company was doing so good, things like that. But, like, you know, now it's a little awkward because I was buddies with Brock, and he knew the story about this before. But now, you know, they're together, so now I got to worry about Brock kicking the shit out of me. But, you know, we were at a pay-per-view in England, and, okay, it was well-known that that was Sable and Mark's last day in with the company in general.
Right.
And they did the same ass thing. They hid their shit across the other side of the Wembley Arena. So we, you know, we planned things out. There was a turd hidden in a cup this time. And somebody went on recon and found out the location of the luggage and everything. And I was at gorilla position, ready to go out for my match with Shane McMahon, like one of the top matches on the pay-per-view. And I said, I got to piss. And I fucking ran as hard as I could, Steve. I got the fucking cup, and then I ran to where they said all their stuff was, and I couldn't find it. And so I ran around a little bit, and the whole time I'm going, oh, fuck, anytime my music's playing. Finally, I found it. I made the deposit, and I fucking ran as fast as I could back to Gorilla. My music started playing. Boom, I walked through the curtain, went and had my fucking match, and somebody else got the blame for it. And she carried it all the way back and found it when they got home in Jacksonville through customs and everything.
So it got through customs.
Yeah, international shit smuggler. So JR, you know, he's just doing his job. We're doing an appearance at Planet Hollywood and Mall of America, and he's like, you know, somebody shit in Sable's bag. She's not too happy about it, and the lawyer's talking about getting DNA samples, and I laughed my ass up. I'm like, he's like, you don't know who did it, do you? And I'm like, I can't answer that question, Jim. And I'm laughing. I'm going, what are they going to do, everybody shit in a bucket and take a DNA sample? And I remember we got back from the trip, and we sat down with Vince, and, you know, I forget who it was, maybe Hunter or somebody actually made the comment to Vince, yeah, the food was a shits in Europe. And Vince just said, I have no idea what you're talking about. Just got up and walked away.
Hey, man, what's your relationship like with Vince? Because you come to
pretty
the
cool.
I know, but check it out. You come to the company in 1993, skinny ass punk kid,
right?
Younger than a son bitch. You work your way into that angle with Scott Hall, you know, where you beat him, the upset, which was just television gold, and it was great. You guys had such great chemistry together. But when you come in, little bitty son bitch, and you got over, but what was his attitude towards you? Because, you know, Vince loves big guys.
Right. It was tough because the whole idea was Vince's, right? The angle, because
right.
The angle wasn't just to introduce me, it was to actually turn Scott babyface.
Right.
So it was killing two birds with one stone. And, you know, I had my tryout match in Phoenix, Arizona, the day after WrestleMania 9. And thank God, because back then, when you came in for a tryout match, they'd stick you with Virgil or goddamn Jim Powers or Lombardi. Guys that had no vested interest in you getting a job there whatsoever.
Right.
You know?
Meaning, not running them down, but they weren't really interested in shining you up so
exactly.
That you can make an impression.
Exactly, as Strongbow used to say. But Chief J. Strongbow.
Yeah, he was great.
Rest in peace. So Vince liked me from the get-go, and apparently he knew before my tryout he was going to hire me. I worked with Louis Spicoli, another guy that passed away because of mixing somas and alcohol.
Yeah.
But he gave me a, I couldn't ask for a better match. You know.
Yeah, the kid could work.
Got all my shit in, Steve.
Yeah. Got all your shit in. Yeah, trademark.
Yeah, I did both dives out to the floor, like it was and ridiculous suicide dives. I was just letting it all hang out. This was my chance, right? And Brad even came up to me afterwards, putting my stuff over. And I'm standing outside Vince's door. You know how guys do, right?
Yeah.
Waiting for a word with Vince. And he just came out, and he thanked me for being there. And I didn't hear anything for a couple of months. But, you know, then he called me up. He ran the angle by me and asked me what I thought of it. And it's like, of course, what do you think I'm going to say? Nobody, I don't think anybody has ever been brought in better than that, ever. That's the best way anybody's ever been brought in my opinion.
The shit pile better than the ringmaster.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's better than anybody, really, because everybody else just came in the conventional way, you know? So everything that, you know, Vince came up with when it came to that worked like a charm. But I got too big for my britches with the ribs and all that stupid shit, and he had to put me in my place. And so they had me job to IRS at SummerSlam, and like they kind of punished me for a while. And then, you know, I started coming back up and, like, had a great match with Owen, and then had a fucking match with Bret Hart that still to this day, like, people talk about it. And he gave me, even though I lost, he put me over. He actually went out on a limb and kind of turned heel just to get me over. Like, and I got all my shit in, and we had probably a 35-minute match cut down to 25 for TV. And at the end, he raised my hand, hugged me. It was like, shit, man. That boosted my credibility straight to the top, you know. And things were going good until you know, like, the whole talk of heading down south came about.
Well, hey, but before we go down south, when did you invent the Bronco Buster? What in the fuck was that all about?
Well, Hakushi used to do the similar move, just the part where he'd run and land on a guy.
Yeah.
And basically, Hakushi was back in Japan, so, you know, the patent had expired.
Right.
So, you know, I repatented that bitch, and I added a little stank to it. You know? So I was doing that in WCW, and Standards and Practices was like, no, Luden Lascivious, no way. So I was still trying to get it in. I'd have guys go on their back and do it on their back this time. And, you know, it was basically the idea of it was just a domination thing, not any kind of homosexual, you know.
Did you ever rib a guy and really just rub your balls all over the face or at your ass just as a rib? Or did you kind of play it on a professional and it was what it was and pop the people and get off?
No, it was what it was. I didn't want to be a dick.
Right.
No pun intended. But nobody wanted to do it at first. Even when I came back to work for Vince, like Mick Foley wouldn't roll over and lay in the corner, and I had to kind of do it all half-assed. And then like a year later, he's begging me to do it to him because it would get such a good reaction.
What about the suicide somersault senton? You ain't had no crash landings on that or breaking?
Hell yeah. Broke my neck.
That's how you broke your neck?
That's the first time I broke my neck.
What happened? What went wrong?
There was like the rails were too close. Instead of, you know, like to me, when a guy jumps, I'm catching him. I don't give a fuck. Like, I've almost died making sure a guy was okay.
But like, that's the code, like right there. When you're the guy who's out on the floor, on the cement, whether it's a pad or whatever, if you're supposed to catch that guy, if you're supposed to be a landing pad for a watermelon or whatever the hell it is, you must catch that guy or make the sacrifice to catch him because he's trusting you to do that. That's what you're saying you did. You were always there.
And that goes with everything as far as giving your body to the other guy.
Yeah, but especially something high risk like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the past, when I was like 19 and working for Dennis Caraluzzo and Larry Sharp in Clementon, New Jersey, some brownie dove off the top onto me and dove way over my head. I jumped up to catch him, and his weight came down on my head onto the concrete, and I was in the hospital for 3 days with a blood clot on my brain, and I couldn't work for months. And they actually told me don't ever work again, but I wasn't going to listen to that. So anyways, Akushi, I dove on him. I did the, it's called a Topicon Hero, actually, in Spanish. You know, you hit the ropes, the guy's on the floor. I bounce off the, my hands off of the top rope, and I flip onto the guy.
Right.
And he kind of bailed on me, man, to be honest with you, because he was real close to himself hitting the rail.
Right.
And I've caught guys and bashed my head and my everything into the rail so many times I can't remember. I don't remember it ever really injuring me too bad. You know, but
hey, well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about hitting.
I was messed up, but I didn't realize my neck was broken until I got back to the States, and I was working a tag match, Razor and I, against Road Dogg and Jeff, and Scott Hall. We would do this double team spot where he would give the guy the sack of shit slam.
Yep.
And which is a fall away slam, and then I'd hit the ropes. He'd catch me for the sack of shit, and he'd sack of shit me on our opponent. Well, when he did that, that's when the neck thing like really went, and I was paralyzed. I was paralyzed for probably about 30 seconds, maybe more, but it seemed like forever. You know?
Yeah, when you can't move, it sucks.
And they thought I was, and they thought I had overdosed. So they're getting ready to fire me, and meanwhile, I got a broken fucking neck. So I went to the hospital, you know, and they told him, hey, look, he's done. He's not, you know, his wrestling career is done. He's got a broken neck, you know, and which I knew that was bullshit, too. I wasn't hearing it, you know.
You're listening to another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show, only on Podcast One.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more, and Geico would just like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's Geico's turn to share too with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. And because Geico's committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. So who worked on your neck?
A guy named Dr. Ed Haynes out of Minneapolis, and he did a great job, actually.
How's it feel these days?
It feels pretty damn good.
Did you have a fusion or just some trash cleaned off of it?
No, C5, C6 fusion with the whole titanium plate and the three screws in there.
Did you use bone bank or something from your
bank,
hip?
Bone bank, baby.
Why did you use stuff from your hip?
Because they told me that when they harvest from the hip, that actually hurts worse than the recovery from the surgery.
All right, what I'm talking about, ladies and gentlemen, when you get your neck fused, if they've got to remove a disc or something like that, they've got to replace that with a spacer. So sometimes they'll use cadaver bone, which is from the bone bank, or they'll go into iliac crest, which is what they used on mine, on my C3-4 fusion.
Uh-huh.
So it was overrated, dude. They said, hey, man, you need to use your own bone because it's going to be healthier and it's going to grow together faster. So my hip didn't bother me at all. For me, when I got my neck fused up, finally when I came out of my soft and hard collar, you know, I had to get in my pickup truck and go drive up and down the road so I could feel like I was on the road.
Yeah.
You know, because that was the hardest thing for me was sitting around. So I drive down to Fredericksburg, go into Sonic, pull in there and get me a jalapeno burger with cheese, some tater tots, and a big vanilla Diet Coke, and drive home. And when they did my neck, it was hard for me to swallow. So there was a couple times I thought I was going to choke to death, I swear to God.
Shit gets caught in your esophagus.
Dude, and when you can't breathe, that's a hell of a come to Jesus meeting.
Yeah.
I'm driving down the truck, I'm going down the road 65 miles an hour. All of a sudden, something stuck in my throat, and I'm thinking to myself, you got to be shitting me. This is how Stone Cold Steve Austin is going to drive in his pickup with a jalapeno cheeseburger wedged in his gullet. Please. Finally, you know, I washed it down, but it did the same thing happen to you?
Yeah, man, but it wasn't necessary. It was when I ate, but what really bothered me was when I would try to take my pills and they'd get caught in the middle of my throat. And they'd get caught right where the screws in the plate were.
Yeah.
And I'd have to start shaking the plate around and my larynx around to get the damn pills to go down my throat. You know? So that was what was really pissing me off back when I was still taking pills.
Well, to this day, even if I go to the nutrition store to get some amino acids or something, if they come in those big horse pills,
yeah.
I won't get them because the motherfuckers are too small, too big to swallow.
So, but anyways, like, you know, the second time that I broke my neck, it was in the ring in a house show, me taking Scott's place. On a house show working with Luger. And we had, at that point, Luger was really hot as a baby face. Because, like...
This was Lex Express time or what?
No, this was NWO stuff.
Okay.
And we had already run through everybody, and we'd gotten all our heat. So, because we just destroyed everybody. And then, at this point, we had started to give back, you know? Like with Dallas getting to us, and we liked Lex, because he was easy to work with, even though he didn't do much, you know. Like he listened.
Lex was easy to work with.
He was, man. Cause wow. When he was over, once we got him over, he was easy as hell because he just did what we told him. I mean, we'd tell him everything to do.
Right.
You know, the crab shot, the screaming clothesline.
Screaming clothesline.
Everything. And
that was always a big
riff. The belly bump.
Yeah.
I come off pretty fast, and those rings are small down, you know, WCW.
Yeah.
And I started going ass over tea kettle. I'm about 10 foot in air, and Arn's watching because he's an agent. And to listen to him tell the story, it's pretty damn funny. You know how funny he is at telling stories.
Yeah.
So he's like, man, I knew right away. And, man, when I landed right on my head, and I felt that splatter, and my whole left side went numb, immediately started atrophying. And I went like 2.5-3 weeks working like that because I was trying to get a raise. Because I'd been, you know, I came in, and they didn't have any real expectations because...
Which side started atrophying?
Came in. They got their 90-day window when you have to give the release.
Right.
Or when you have to, you know, give notice. So the contract doesn't roll over. And I know Kevin already talked about this. But what he didn't mention was I was the first one that was supposed to go because I was the first one to talk with Barry Bloom because, you know, I was friendly with Jesse Ventura from Minnesota. And Barry was Jesse's agent. So I went there looking to get some movie work. I never planned on leaving, you know, Vince. And he started telling me about, you know, all the money being thrown around by Eric. And, you know, that's when I called Scott. And that's kind of what started that whole thing rolling.
Right.
So, once I got down there, you know, then once they saw me in the main, once I was in a main event spot, like we were in a 6-man main event for a pay-per-view, and that's when they really started looking at me more like a top guy. And I was trying to get the raise, you know,
right,
to get more closer to what the main event guys were getting paid.
Which side of yours started?
Left side.
Left side.
Yeah.
Because that's the same thing happened to me. My left hand. And, boy, when your shit starts to atrophy, it's a scary thing because you spend your whole life in the gym trying to build up, and all of a sudden you see your muscles just deteriorating because that nerve's getting stepped on.
Yep.
It's a come-to-Jesus meeting with yourself.
Yeah. That's why when I woke up from my surgery, I was in immediate relief, Steve, because it had been so long since I had been without that kind of pain that I didn't know what it was like.
Right.
You know, and I don't know about you, but I did physical therapy on those med tech machines that Art Jones invented, the guy that invented Nautilus. Some doctors don't have the guys do that resistance training on their neck after they have the surgery.
No, I didn't do anything with my neck, but just as far as that nerve stuff goes, man, you know, once you start getting the nerve pains, in my case, you know, I had bone spurs growing into my spinal cord along with spinal stenosis on top of the bruise that I sustained when I got dropped on my head and paralyzed for about 90 seconds. But, you know, if you're stepping on a water hose and you shut that water down,
yep.
It's kind of similar to how the nervous, as very simplified redneck approach, But if you step on that water hose and if you take your foot off, the water will keep coming out. But on a nerve, if you step on that nerve too long, whatever's on the other side of that dies.
It's dead.
And that's what happened to Paul Orndorff, a very, very good friend of mine and my old hunting partner. He was making really good money with Hogan. He didn't want to take time off for the surgery. Finally, he did. But at that point, man, his left arm was gone.
Yep. And that's an extreme case, too. Because, I mean, you look at him from one side, and he still looked like the same old Paul Orndorff. Then you look at that right side, or whatever side it was.
Yeah, pardon me. I think it was his right side because he was still able to work his left side. Yeah, yeah.
But, that's why he still knocked Vader out.
Hey, man. Oh, dude. You never. Yeah, I got to have Vader on the show. I was here. Hey, I got a story for you. I was living outside of Atlanta, and it was TV taping at Center Stage. And I was going to come down, say hi, and see the boys. My tricep was still healing up.
Right.
And they called me and said, hey, don't worry about it. Don't show up. And, of course, that's not a good thing. I was soon to be fired.
Right.
But anyway, that's the day, that's the night at the TV taping that Vader was walking along like a bully. And finally, he shouldered the shit out of Orndorff, who was an agent at the time, had his piece of paper going around helping guys out.
In his flip-flops.
And, mister, he ran into the wrong guy. They got into a scuffle, and at first he got the best of Orndorff, and then they jumped back into it, and Orndorff hit him with the swinging door left, dropped him, and put the boots to him. But in this case, the flip-flops.
Yeah.
I got the call from Brian Pillman. Brian called me back. Kid, you ain't going to believe it. Paul Orndorff damn near killed Vader. If he'd been wearing a pair of high techs, he would have. He kicked his ass with flip flops. Paul was a salty son of a bitch. You heard about the fight when him and Tony Atlas were driving down the road back in the day, right?
Actually, I didn't hear that one, and I've heard just about all of them.
Oh man, it was Orndorff, Atlas, because I used to travel with Tony Atlas. But anyway, I guess there were three guys in the car. There was a disagreement, and Orndorff and Atlas pulled over on the side of the road and was going to fight it out. And they got into it, and Paul bit part of Tony Atlas's ear off. And Tony missed a couple of shots for it. And I think Watts fined him for missing the shots because Paul had bitten his ear off. And that's just the way it was back in the day.
Wow. I didn't know Paul had some Samoan in him.
Oh, dude. You know, Paul, he grew up in Brandon, Florida.
Brandon
they called
Bull,
him the
baby.
Brandon Bull, baby. You didn't mess with Paul Orndorff.
To this day.
Dude, he was a badass dude. Hey, speaking of
University of Tampa, him, Matusek, that college football team would whip an NFL team's ass back in those days.
Hey, I'm sitting here watching YouTube, watching highlights of you. Who was influential in you creating your work style in the ring?
Oh, wow. Bret Hart, Dynamite, Terry Funk. So many guys, some English, you know, some British guys. A lot of it came straight from Malenko because he was such a master of psychology.
Right.
And Terry Funk says he's one of the greatest promos that's ever been in the wrestling industry.
Right.
It's unfortunate that there's very little footage of his career, like, because you can learn a lot by watching that old man.
Hey, you brought promos up. Who was some of your favorite promos through your entire history of being in love with professional wrestling? Whose promos did you enjoy?
Wow, different guys with different reasons. Like Jody Hamilton, that guy could cut a promo. That guy was a hell of a promo.
Very low key.
Terry Funk, obviously.
Yeah.
Billy Jack was a big deal in Florida.
Yep.
And he wasn't a real polished promo, but he had that I'm no better than anybody else. You know, we're all in this boat together. I'm one of the people. I'm the people's champ.
Yeah.
Thing, and like that resonated with me. Different, you know, a lot. Wow. And then after being in the business, like, I'm not just to blow smoke up your ass. Like, yours were, like, nobody could touch you, in my opinion.
Yeah, I had a good thing going there for a while. Did you? I was a big.
You were just being you.
Yeah, and I meant what I said, you know. And that, to me, that's one of the things about a promo to me is, man, I tell you what, you better mean and believe exactly what you're saying. You can't just be reciting a bunch of diatribe or verbiage or dialogue, and you got this blank look in your eyes because you can see through those eyes and see, like, this motherfucker's talking, but I ain't buying a word he says.
You don't believe in what he's saying.
I dug the superstar, man. I go back. I still get on YouTube, and I watch some of the
superstar. Billy Graham or Mass Superstar?
No. Superstar Billy Graham, man. Yeah. He was coming out of Madison Square Garden. Some of those old interviews with Vince from back in the day, or some of the stuff from Superstar was in AWA. And, man, that dude, he just was totally out there, totally bought it, totally believed it. The cadence with which he spoke and,
that came from him being an evangelical preacher, too.
Is that what got him there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of evangelical preachers, I just talked to Bruce Pritchard the other day. He's coming on the show here next week. When he was Brother Love, I loved when he was Brother Love, and because he was a big Robert Tilton guy. He got off on a little bit of Benny Hinn, Jimmy Swaggart. Oh, yeah, we were having this conversation. Jim Baker.
Robert Tilton, that guy's going straight to hell.
Oh, dude, he's running roughshod in Texas for a long time. They kicked him out. He went down to Florida. He's still down in Florida now. He's right down there in your neck of the woods if you want to go listen to him speak and put some money in the tray.
Listen to him to go into tongues and all that stuff. That's a classic stuff right there.
Hey, check this out. You remember back in the day when we used to go wrestle at the Houston Summit?
Yeah.
And then they changed the name to the Compact Center. But these days,
Lakewood Church, baby.
Brother, every Sunday and every Wednesday, Joel Osteen packs them in. They come to see that guy lay down whatever he's laying down. But I would never have thought back in the day if you said, hey, one of these days there's going to be a cat in here preaching and selling this sumbitch out twice a week. But he is.
He is, man.
He cuts a hell of a damn promo. He blinks a lot, but he cuts a good promo.
He's great. He's a very uplifting guy. Like, even if you're not, a big believer or whatever, that guy just has a positive message. You don't preach a bunch of, hellfire and brimstone.
Yeah, he is. He's
people off.
Yeah, he's pretty much positivity cat, yeah. And that's his bottom line. That's his MO, and it's hard to nitpick through that because it's just positivity, and ain't nothing wrong with being positive, so that's a pretty good thing. Hey, on a different note, some of the epic matches throughout your love of professional wrestling that stood out to you, whether it was Steamboat Savage in WrestleMania, whatever it was. What was that, 3?
Yep, WrestleMania 3.
What were some of the pivotal matches that you enjoyed watching as a fan of the business?
As a fan before I got in the business? Or
anytime.
Being part of the business.
Anytime.
See, because I'm a fan to this day.
Yep.
I'm a mark for wrestling to this very day. Like, that's, when somebody was mentioning some about being a mark, I'm like, hey, bro, I'm a mark, too.
Oh, that's what I told someone on Twitter the other day. I said, hell, I'm a mark. I get to sit there and listen to people answer all my questions and mark out and then ask more questions. So, I was a big mark for the Iron Man match between Bret and Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, phenomenal. That was amazing. Every night that on the house shows that Scott and Shawn went out there and tore it up, they had some ladder matches leading up to WrestleMania 10, Steve, that would blow that WrestleMania 10 match out of the water.
Yeah.
That are not on video. They didn't tape the house shows back then, and they are lost to only to people's memories. Flair and Steamboat.
Yeah.
Flair and Funk.
Yep.
Flair and damn near everybody. And Flair and I, we haven't always seen eye to eye.
Yep.
We run the other side of the tracks from each other, but I can't help but be a Ric Flair lover.
Oh, he's my favorite of all time. But, man, you go back to, say, Dusty Flair. You go back to some of those Four Horsemen matches.
Yep.
And some of the stuff when Magnum T.A. was running roughshod.
Barry Windham and Ric Flair from Battle of the Belts 2 in
Orlando. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Barry was so graceful as a big man in the ring. I don't think you classify him as a big man, but Barry was 6'6", 260.
Yeah, no, he's a big man.
But he's a gazelle, but he didn't work like one.
Right, because he always sold, because he, yeah. Yeah, he was a big guy that sold.
What is your favorite
and he
match?
Sold, and he sold like nobody else. Like, I mean, like steamboat quality selling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you know, he could get color right in front of you and you wouldn't know it.
Yeah.
I mean, right freaking 2 feet in front of you and you wouldn't know it.
You're listening to another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show, only on Podcast One.
You want to spend less time working on your lawn and more time sitting on your lawn with an ice cold one? Well, here you go. Scott's Turf Builder Triple Action kills weeds, prevents crabgrass, and feeds to build thick green lawns. With Scott's Turf Builder Triple Action, you can finally get the lawn you've always dreamt of. When you feed with Scott's Turf Builder Triple Action multiple times throughout the year, your grass will be greener, stronger, and more resilient. Scott's Turf Builder Triple Action will give your yard the nourishment it needs to help your weak, thin lawn recover. Also, Scott's No Quibble money-back guarantee states, if you're not satisfied, you get your money back. Simple as that. Slam down a bag today. This is the Scott's Yard.
Barry really took me under his wing when I went to WCW, and I had a lot of matches with him, and I traveled with him quite a bit, too. And we didn't hang out together, but man, I tell you what, that guy taught me so much and was so unselfish and giving in the ring, and I clobbered that guy in the mouth. I have a scar, I have a scar on my hand, two scars, where I hit him in the mouth with my clothesline, sloppy as hell, and his mouth was bleeding, and he didn't say a damn word to me.
Yep.
That's how cool, and I mean, dude, he owes me like a million receipts, and I was just trying to be aggressive and try to hang with the guy, and he didn't give a shit. That's how tough, and everybody knew Barry could go out and drink all night long, and when he showed up the next day or saw him in the morning, he would no sell anything, and he'd work his ass off that night.
Yeah, he would, and when he did the Yellow Dog stuff down here in Florida, that was some classic stuff, man. All that stuff with Dusty as a Midnight Rider, and Sullivan was the top heel, you know, and he was a small guy, but man, he worked like King Kong. He worked like Andre the Giant, you know, and he was unbelievable because of that devil thing he was doing.
Right, right, right.
I mean, people were scared to death of that sumbitch.
Hey, when I watched some of the stuff back, and I was watching something last night, as a matter of fact, it was Tully Blanchard doing his slingshot suplex.
Yeah.
But, man, the way they were talking about the moves and the impact, how he gained that extra momentum from the slingshot,
yeah. And
the way it was produced, dude, you and I come from the places we've come and, of course, love the WWE.
Yep.
But I think I wish they'd dim it down a little bit. And not make it so slick and kind of go back a little bit at old school. Because, boy, when I put some mid-80s stuff on from NWA or Power Pro,
yep.
That's the shit, brother.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, man. And that's a big part of it. Like you just mentioned, things are way too overproduced now, man. It's too sanitized.
It's too slick. And don't get me wrong, we'll stop here because you love the company. I do too. But I just wish we could take a step backwards every now and then, dim down the lights, see only the first four, five, six rows, and focus on that damn squared circle.
Amen.
Two cats getting it on in the ring, and the commentators are talking about that action in the ring and that action exclusively. Instead of white noise. With that being said, hey, what is...
I grew up on Gordon Solie.
Yes, sir.
And wow, man.
Well, listen to Jim Ross in his prime. Yeah, Gordon Solie or Jim Ross in his prime talking about that stuff that was going on in the ring.
Yep. I mean, they made... I'm going to tell you what. Jim Ross and Randy Savage did the commentary for my match with Bret Hart, and they took that match, which was already, I consider, like my greatest singles match I've ever had, and they made it even twice as good.
And that's what they're supposed to be doing, you know? That's what you're supposed to present a steak, and they put the salt and pepper on that steak, am I right?
Damn straight.
Ah, shit, man. Hey, so... Before we wrap this thing up, goddamn, I've had a good time talking to you.
Me
so,
too, man.
I got to ask you, your favorite match, you keep going back to you versus Brett. What was your favorite match that you were a part of?
Well, I always say that match with Brett But there's also a tag match from a show that was called The Action Zone. It was on Sunday morning, and we were the first, for the first time that show came on, we were the main event. It was Razor and myself as the 1-2-3 Kid versus Shawn Michaels and Diesel.
Right.
And it was about a half an hour, and it was in White Plains. And we were running White Plains to death, Steve. We were doing TV there. Yeah. Oh, so much that those people were so hard. You know how it's like hard to get over in the garden?
Yep.
It was like that kind of shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like the people that had already seen everything there was to see, they were pretty much drained of all their energy. And then we went out there and we relit them up, man. And I'm so proud of that match. To this day, it was like, it was a work of art, in my opinion. And my matches in WCW, I had a match with Dean Malenko. I'm really proud of.
Dean's badass. Dean's badass.
Yep.
Love his work.
Yeah, and we played off of his dad, like his dad. We used his dad in the angle because I was, his dad was like a father to me as well. And it made it really have a sense of legitimacy to it.
Yep.
And also, myself, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall as the Wolfpack versus Roddy Piper, Ric Flair, and Kevin Green. It was Nate's return in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Oh, hot crowd.
Out.
Yeah.
And Kevin Green was in the Charlotte Panthers.
Yep.
And Roddy was over like a motherfucker.
Roddy's
and,
Roddy.
We had him thinking we weren't going to do the job for him the whole time. We had him going, man. We were like, the interviews were a shoot. Like, I mean, we were taking real, like, heavy shots on you know, live TV.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because once you got that mic and you're live, you ain't nothing they can do except, you know, go to break. So we were really pissing him off. And I overstepped my boundaries with Rick. I mean, I disrespected him a bit. I smacked the shit out of him one time on live TV. And he turned bright red and chased me around that damn building. And, like, I thought he was going to want to fight when we got back. But he was just saying, oh, that was good. But once we got to the building that night, the whole time they're thinking that we're not doing a job, we all three laid down for him right in the middle at the end. Let him stand over top of us.
Oh, that's great.
Get the glory. People were crying, Steve.
Yeah, it's like you say when Ricky Morton be selling goddamn girls crying in the front row.
They were, man. They were crying.
But, you know, that's when you got something good, when people are so emotionally invested that you get that kind of response. That's what pro wrestling's about. If you want to call it sports entertainment, go ahead and call it sports entertainment, but it's human emotion is what matters.
Absolutely, man. And, you know, your matches, like, there's so many of your matches, Steve, with so many guys, like, you know, Rock. You and Rock toured up. You guys had great chemistry.
Yeah, we had good chemistry. We had good chemistry. We ain't gonna talk about me. Hey, let me ask you one more question.
Gonna tell you about what? You know, just every time I'd been in the ring with you, how given you were to me. Like you know, even if we were in a battle royal or some kind of situation, you'd come find me and call me, give you a spin kick or something. You know, you were so good at working on the fly and just calling shit out there. Man, I never seen anybody that good at that. In my life.
Every time I took that spin kick, I always asked myself, why the fuck did you tell him to spin kick you? Hey, last question. Here's a question that always comes up that people always want me to ask, or they always want to ask me, who was the toughest guy in the business that you knew?
Ooh.
You can give me a list of about three people, but there's only a couple that are really going to foot the bill.
Well, you know, I mean, it's hard not to put Shamrock up there, but because
he's the most dangerous man in the world at one point. So you can put him on there. Yeah, he can damn sure qualify. Give me another one.
Wow. Fitz got to be up there.
Fit Finley?
Yeah.
Yep.
From what I hear, from everything I've heard.
Dude, he's one of my favorite workers to watch. I always told Vince, if you put a guy with him for 2 years and let him train him, and the guy's got some mobility, Fitz's mannerisms, his ring generalship, the way he conducts himself in the ring.
No God, wasted movement.
Dude, that dude is so bad. Dude, you got to have Haku on your list.
Haku, right, for sure. You know, people like to talk about Dr. Dusty Williams.
Yep.
Which, you know, unfortunately, you know, he got tanked by Bart Gunn.
And, hey, but Bart was a big old tough, you know, corn-fed son bitch in his own right now.
Yeah.
And Bart could fight.
Yeah, and that was, I thought that was a big mistake, him going against Butterbean. Obviously, that ended up being the case.
Well, dude, you know, a pro wrestler versus
pro.
Hey, Butterbean, you know, he's a pro boxer. I mean, you know, hey, man, he's a big son of a bitch, but he hits like a ton of bricks.
Yeah, and it's hard to hurt him because he's got so much weight behind him.
Yeah, somebody's got a hell of a I wouldn't want to get hit by his working punch.
No way.
Hey, man.
Strongbow used to say, I've had easier street fights than working with such and such a guy.
Yeah. I've had a few of those myself. And back when I was making my comebacks, I used to throw a bunch of knuckle sandwiches, but that's a whole nother story for a whole nother day. Hey, man, I hope you will come back and join me again.
I hope you'll have me, Steve.
Oh, I will. I've been talking to Sean Waltman, a.k.a. X-Pac. You can follow him on Twitter, @TheRealXPac. If you want to book Sean Waltman for a show, you can contact him where, Sean?
You know, you can contact me at SeanWaltman123@yahoo.com. Through my Facebook, which is Facebook.com/XPac6, the number 6. And, you know, we have that UK tour coming up I was telling you about, the Wolfpack tour, the Q&A bullshit session.
What's the dates on that?
That'll be November 19th, 20th, and 21st. We're starting in Glasgow. We're going to Manchester, and we're ending in London. And there might be more dates added because tickets are going real fast. And I also am working – hey, check this out. I have a match for Tommy Dreamer's House of Hardcore promotion.
Right.
And Poughkeepsie coming up. And it's going to be myself and Lance Storm versus Tommy Dreamer and Terry Funk.
Yeah, as a matter
I'm
of fact.
So excited. Even though Terry's older now, I'm so excited to get in the ring with him, man. He's always been one of my all-time favorites, and I love the guy to death.
I do, too. I was talking to Lance Storm. He was telling me about the same match. So
yeah.
That's going to be a barn burner. I look forward to it. And, well, hell, man, I tell you what, I sure appreciate you being on the show. All right, to give me the go-home cue, don't forget to rate and review the Steve Austin Show on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends to check us out. If you want to reach me here on the podcast, send an email to questions@steveaustinshow.com. The best damn IPA on the planet is Broken Skull IPA at El Segundo Brewing Company. You can also get Broken Skull IPA at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California. If you're not in California, check out ElSegundoBrewing.com because we might be heading your way. We are in 17 states. Go to the ElSegundoBrewing.com website, click on BS IPA, and look at the interactive map to find the location nearest you. Thank you for all your support, and this badass IPA, in my opinion, is the best IPA in America, and that's the bottom line, because I said so. I'd like to say one more thank you for all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially BetOnline, Geico, Scott's, and Rocket Mortgage. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you free twice a week. Please support them because they support us. If you need more info, check out the show description to this episode for details. Folks, if you see me riding something in the woods, you can bet your ass it'll be a Kawasaki. Until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I'll catch your ass down the road.
Thank you for joining us for another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends. For more Steve Austin Show, go to podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.